This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
Oh, and I'm so glad we're here to talk and to listen and to learn and to have some fun. Here we are, middle of the week. Some people still call it hump day. Oh, where did the camel go? Oh, did I just hear the camel?
Camel's live in studio right now.
I thought the camel was laid off. I had no idea. Oh, goodness. That's great. That's fabulous. The camel lives. And here we go. T-minus tomorrow. Well, there have been celebrations already underway for the Detroit NFL draft. And WJR is, as you heard a moment ago, Mike, that was a nice little promo that you and Renee did. We're ready.
Excited for people to see the city.
And a lot of people are going to see the city. And, it's not sunny right now, but then again, it's not raining. And we're hoping the weather cooperates and makes it comfortable for our visitors and comfortable for the homers, the people who live here, who are going to have this, incredible opportunity to host hundreds of thousands of others, and to enjoy the festivities themselves.
I was thinking about this on the way in. I'm not super worried about the weather as long as it doesn't rain, because these are football people. They're football fans, football professionals. They play at snowy Lambeau Field. They're playing in snowy Foxborough. 49 degrees and clear is going to be nothing for them. I think we'll be okay.
It'll make them feel like we're in football season.
Football weather.
Football weather, football season. It's all fine, and you're right. They can easily handle that. That's for sure. Well, here we are. We're underway. We've got a lot going on today. The president just, about an hour ago, had a little press conference, a little disheveled, but he did sign the big how many billions? $95 billion foreign aid package. He talked about the delays. He talked about it being bipartisan. Now we'll see if Speaker Johnson loses his job for working together to try to get something done. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are for it and against it. But there you go. It's called bipartisan legislation with sanctions on Iran, the seizure of frozen Russian sovereign assets, and a measure that could lead to a nationwide ban on TikTok. Now, you might not have thought that was such a good idea, the TikTok thing. But I got to tell you, looking at these students, these such ill-informed students, and it's happening across the country, what's the one thing that ties them together? It's social media and TikTok. And someone's been feeding them a bunch of garbage. Garbage in, garbage out.
And Columbia might be calling in the National Guard, which that would get ugly if it came to that.
Well, there are a lot of us who remember when the National Guard was called in Ohio, led to the song, Four Dead in Ohio. You remember that? Well, you probably don't. You're very young, but a lot of us remember that a long time ago. But be that as it may, House Speaker Johnson, the aforementioned House Speaker, has actually called on Columbia University President Manoush Shafiq to resign.
And I think he's meeting with Jewish students on campus at Columbia today as well, last I heard.
Who is? The president or,
no,
or
I'm
House
sorry.
Speaker?
Speaker Johnson is.
All right. Because they've been ignored there. I mean, they've been ignored by the hierarchy that doesn't feel like they have to step in and protect the Jewish students. The Jewish students are just as important as the non-Jewish students. They pay money to be there and to be safe and to be educated. And that's not being allowed to happen. And so far, Columbia is allowing them to not let that happen. This is convoluted the way I'm saying it. But anyway, Johnson says the Columbia University president, Manoush Shafiq, is very weak and inept, and he should resign. That's hard to argue. I never knew who the guy was, never heard his name that I recall. But clearly, the people in charge of these universities that are allowing this as if it's part of the student experience, you can have the right to say any number of things, freedom of speech. You can complain, you can do all that, but you cannot threaten people, threaten to harm them or even harm them. You can't do it.
And, of course, this is a case of a bunch of extremists ruining it for everyone else. There's been allegations of outside agitators. I have seen interviews with the pro-Palestinian protesters saying that they denounce the violence. However, the ones who are getting out of line are hijacking it for the rest of them.
Oh, there's no question. And I love it when a reporter is smart enough, brave enough to stick a microphone in one of the protesters' face and start quizzing them on what they're upset about and about Israel and about whatever. And many of them have no idea, really, why they're there protesting. They are protesting because everyone else is. They are the sheeple. They'll be sheeple all their lives. They're the sheeple following everybody else. I was stunned. They didn't even know why they were there. They couldn't, well, people have said they couldn't pick Israel out on a map. Well, that's a lot of people. We are, lots of us are geographically challenged. Be that as it may, there are a lot of people there. First of all, how do you get all of the shirts printed with the same slogan? How do you get all the same tents? After the police take them away, the next day they're back again? Somebody's funding this. Someone is behind this. And we know that our enemies are loving to see this kind of turmoil in these United States. They can go right to their people and say, you think America's great? Look at this problem. You don't want to leave here. Well, they still leave there. This is the country people want to come to. They'll die coming to this country, no matter how bad these people try to make America look. Of course, this doesn't take outside influence. This takes idiots that are in Washington, like AOC, I call her America off course, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Here's her quote. Calling in police enforcement on nonviolent demonstrations of young students on campus is an escalatory, reckless, and dangerous act. It represents a heinous failure of leadership that puts people's lives at risk. I condemn it in the strongest possible terms. There you go. She is, again, condemning law and order. She's the one who wanted to defund the police, and she's been anti-Israel all along. So seeing these kids be so blatantly not just pro-Palestinian, I'm pro-Palestinian, I'm pro-Israeli. I don't have to go out there and burn flags and say death to America, death to Israel, death to Palestine, death to anybody. But they feel they do need to. And AOC is so off her rocker and at the heart of the problems we have in these United States. And that's not from outside money or outside agitators. That's from within. And we all know the famous slogan of, if America ever fails and falls and collapses, it will be from within. And AOC is a perfect example of that, which is one of the reasons why we've welcomed Mike Rogers back in just a couple of minutes. And we're going to talk about the $95 million foreign aid bill. This is a guy who knows what he's talking about, as opposed to many people in Washington right now. And I'm going to ask him, too, about TikTok, what role it plays in bringing all of these students together under the wrong roof. Boy, we got a lot to talk about today. It's going to be a busy one. But we're also going to have fun somehow or another. And we're getting ready for tomorrow's broadcast right from the thick of things with the 2024 Detroit NFL Draft. You're going to hear it all on WJR all day and all night long. Because you can depend on us. As we continue, Paul W. Smith in Focus on WJR. Yeah, I thank Terry in advance. And Terry will be with us today. I've got an unavoidable doctor's appointment tomorrow. That's the only one thing drawback with a show in the middle of the day. Kind of affects a lot of things like that. So, Terry, thank you for being there. And I can't believe I'm missing my broadcast there from the big event. But you have to do what you have to do. Anyway, Mike Rogers, veteran, former FBI agent, chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, all-around businessman, a Republican Senate candidate, a great guy we've known for a very, very long time. I'd support him for anything that he was running for. I wish he were running for president, but he isn't. And he's here to talk about what's going on today, which it's not. What's going on today is not good, my friends. It is not good for the country. Mike, I'm glad to have you here, and I just want your take on what we are watching across the country, specifically at all of these major universities, where somehow or another, they are all on the same page of hating Israel. Death to Israel. Death to America, for God's sakes. What is going on?
This is a huge problem. This looks a lot more like 1938 than it does 2024, with the blatant anti-Semitism happening on college campuses. And here's what we do know, that the Iranians, it's funny how that happens to be a recurring theme, have been doing disinformation campaigns. They started before the attack, the Hamas attack and brutal killing and terrorist attack and brutal killing of Israelis on October 7th. And it started well before that. They've been doing these constant messaging. We know that they're using platforms like TikTok and other things to talk to and get to kids, specifically targeting college-age kids, through certain type of algorithms that get them to a certain place. And I think what you're seeing now is a fruit of that labor over a period of time. And it is becoming a huge problem. And, you know, there's just a whole bunch of questions that need to get asked. As you said, they all seem to be saying the same thing. They have the same structure and organization. They're doing it in the same ways.
Same tents, same tents, same T-shirts, yes, with the same slogans. Are you kidding me?
Yes, exactly. So this, we have a bigger, yes, this is a huge problem. And it is absolute blatant anti-Semitism. And now I think there's a bigger problem. I think we have some external forces here at work that are trying to help coordinate it. And unfortunately, there are too many willing, you would think, better educated folks about the reality of who Hamas is and what they've done. The country's going to have to take some hard steps. The universities need to step up now and say, we will not tolerate it. If you have if you're an international student, get caught doing this, take away their visa. If you're a student and you're causing these kinds of disruptions and preaching this kind of a hate toward individuals and talking about violence toward these individuals, guess what? You're going to lose your privilege to go to that university. We're going to have to be tough to get this back under control so people understand that you don't have the right to say we should wipe you from the face of the earth.
Well, you've got House Speaker Johnson, who's under fire, calls on Columbia University President Manoush Shafiq to resign. He calls him very weak and inept, and it'd be hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, I mean, they're opening negotiations with people who are doing something that didn't have permission to do in the first place. I'm just not sure how much negotiating you do.
Mayor Adams of New York Police Department blaming outside agitators for the pro-Hamas demonstrations at Columbia. We know that. How much of this could be tied into TikTok, for example?
Oh, I think there's a whole bunch. TikTok is an example, but so they use social media, they being these influence operations. And Iran has gotten very good at it. As they say, all steps, all of the agitation goes through Tehran. So if you think about it, Iran is a Shia country, predominantly Shia country. Hamas is more of a Sunni. So you would not think they'd have this relationship. But this goes to any enemy of my enemy is my friend. And we're seeing it not only with their, you know, Hezbollah, the Shia organization tied to Iran doing activities. You see this Hamas, and they're using all of these platforms, social media and others, to talk into the United States. And I think TikTok is a big part of that. And by the way, if you think China is going to step in and try to help us with that problem, man, I got a bridge to show you. They are eagerly watching the chaos and enjoying every minute.
Loving it. All of our enemies are loving it and holding it up as an example to the people that they represent that can't wait to get out of their countries, to come to America still, by the way. What about your reaction to what AOC said yesterday, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, I call her America off course, calling in police enforcement on nonviolent demonstrations of young students on campus is an escalatory, reckless, and dangerous act. It represents a heinous failure of leadership that puts people's lives at risk. I condemn it in the strongest possible terms. You have a reaction to that?
Yeah, such utter nonsense. Where was she when they were yelling, death to America? Doesn't she think that is will lead to violence in some way? I mean, this is such nonsense. Liberals defy logic, and this to me is one more example. AOC is the part of that squad that I think does not have America's interests in the long term, and their best are to heart. And it's very, very frustrating. And those kind of comments aren't helpful because it gives permission to a lot of these. And they're young folks who are impressionable. You can fight back against the police. Listen, you're breaking the rules. The university said you're not supposed to be there. You're calling for the death of your fellow students. It's probably time you get, you leave. And if it takes police officers to make you leave, well, then they ought to be there to hustle you along.
So be it. Quickly, I just want to say this is so great. You're picking up so much support in your Senate race. And I love Senator John Kennedy, the Republican senator who, with that drawl and the way he says things in a very simple, straightforward way, Senator John Kennedy has just come out supporting you, to back you for your Senate campaign. I think that's fabulous news.
Yeah, thank you. And he is so entertaining to be around in person, too. I've invited him to come to Michigan to share some of that Southern charm up here, and he's agreed to do it. So I'll make sure we let you and your listeners know when they have an opportunity to come see him. He is really fantastic.
Let us know.
Senator.
Yeah, he's a great senator, and I love his stories, and I love the way he presents anything that he's presenting. He just makes simple sense, for goodness sakes. Hey,
absolutely.
Congratulations on that and on a successful Senate race. Keep it going. It's at MikeRogersForSenate.com.
Yes, sir. And we'd love to get you there.
MikeRogersForSenate.com. And read about him. Make your own mind up and your own decision. I've made mine just from following him for years in his various jobs as a FBI agent, chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, all these different things. Now he's our Republican Senate candidate. And best to you, Mike. Talk to you again soon. Best to Christy.
Thanks, Paul, and best to Kim.
You take care as we continue on News Talk 760 WJR. And in fact, Marie Osborne helping out today in for Chris on JR Afternoon with Chris Renwick, and it'll be Marie Osborne today. You'll be in for a good treat there. We've had Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard on a number of times on a whole bunch of different issues, and a lot recently, too, about these international crime rings. There are several teams of criminals coming into our country freely and then robbing us, stealing from our homes. What can we do about it? Is there anything we can do about it? Well, State Representative David Martin, Republican from the 68th District, Genesee County, says yes. And he's spearheading a plan to crack down on those international crime rings targeting our Michigan families. Representative Martin, a pleasure having you here. I'm Paul W. Smith. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Paul W.
I got to tell you, we've heard about this, and we've heard the sheriff talking about everything they can do, but of course, they're involved once the criminal activity begins. Not that they're not out there and looking, but we have to do something to keep these people from so freely getting into this country. And I think it might even be something that has been referred to committee already. I mean, tell me where we are on what is known as House Bill 5650.
So there's two things at play here, both dealing with illegal immigration in a sense. because the crime rings come up here on a 90-day vacation visa and overstay their visa. So therefore, at that point, they're here illegally. And others that come across the border illegally and get deported, and then lo and behold, come back up in our communities again, like the murder over in Grand Rapids, like the drug crimes that are happening in Shiawassee County, trafficking, like the fentanyl that was found in Livonia. So we need to crack down on, you cannot do crime here in Michigan. So we have truth in sentencing for, you have to mandate certain punishments for crime. Well, if you're here illegally, whether you overstay your visa, you get deported, you come back in illegally, and you commit a crime here in Michigan, we can't do anything about immigration, but we can punish you under our laws. And we'll increase that punishment by 50% the first time you get caught again, and then increase it from there again. We do not want to encourage anybody to come here just to commit a crime, because if they don't have a job, if they're coming here illegally and they're just coming here to take advantage of us.
We know what their job is. Their job is to take advantage of us.
Yeah.
Their job
or
is
sell
to
drugs.
They do violent crimes in Michigan, including murder, soliciting sex with a minor, sexual assault. These have already happened.
Correct. It's in our backyard. It's not down in Texas. It's not in San Diego, California. It's right here in our backyard. So you did mention it went to committee. Unfortunately, I sit in the minority. We put this in place to get attention and to have something in place when we take back majority in November so that we can act on it.
Wait a second.
Yes.
State Representative David Martin, who could be against this? Can we list the names of those who would be against trying to protect their Michigan citizens?
So you need to talk to the majority leadership that assigns bills to committee, because they assigned it to government ops. Now, legitimately, government ops may be a place for it. Not really logical. I ask for judicial, but government ops is the is notorious for being the purgatory for bills. They go there to die.
Why would anyone supposedly elected by the people of Michigan not want to step up to protect the people that they are representing? I don't understand that. I think we need to put that out there and make it real clear to people that this bill is specifically to protect all of us, and yet the majority has decided to throw it into, as you put it, a government ops in the place where these kinds of bills go to die.
The only thing I can surmise, I can't really get. I study the other side quite every day, and we're not anti-immigration by any stretch.
This has got nothing to do with legal immigration.
I know, but that's what I think. They just look at immigration, any kind, anybody coming here. Oh, we got to accept them. I don't know if they want them to get IDs and so forth. They just want to welcome and make sure that they can get as many immigrants in here as possible, solve those problems later, as long as they can get an ID, get them into a voting booth with no questions asked, and then sign an affidavit. I really don't know what their goal is, but it makes you very suspicious. It makes you very suspicious of why do they want immigration here at all costs, even illegals, even people causing us damage. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And it makes no sense for brazen criminals, in your own words, brazen criminals who see lax federal immigration laws as a new opportunity to expand their criminal enterprise. And you're right. That can't be tolerated. And you know, the Democrats have been very good at saying that Republicans are anti-immigration. I don't know any Republicans that are anti-immigration. I don't know any good Americans who are anti-immigration. We all have backgrounds that have immigration in our past, but we are legal immigrants. We are people who follow the rules of the United States of America. And we're now seeing what happens in this great country when we have an overabundance of people who didn't follow the rules of the United States of America.
Yeah, there's a definition for sovereignty. That's why we have borders. That's why we have our Constitution, why we assimilate as Americans in our communities. And you can't just break those rules and have chaos and expect things to all fall out and for the good. The governor has a program that anybody that wants help for rent, $500 a month, and I said it's not for illegals, but as long as you file for asylum. So you come here illegally, file for asylum somehow, you can qualify. Well, it doesn't matter they file for asylum. It's how they got here.
Yeah.
And 95% of the asylum cases are always tossed out. And they may be 6 years before they give it a hearing in the first place. So it's wide open to encourage these people to come and for any cause, because they can just stay and not get caught.
Please keep us informed with this. Let's keep this alive and out in the air, even though they've tried to bury it. House Bill 5650, State Representative David Martin. Thank you, sir.
Will do. Thanks for letting me hear that.
Yeah, good luck to you as we continue in Focus on WJR. Well, yeah, this is interesting, and it's perfect for the day before our Detroit NFL draft and all the festivities that we will embrace and enjoy, and you'll hear all about and follow on WJR morning, noon, and night. Kim sent this along, and I went through it too quickly, but it's talking about the statement that the teams are making, and some of the teams, we're not the only team that decided to change our uniforms. They talk about Dallas and saying there was a necessary change, they really needed it, whatever. I don't pay attention to them too much, but I'm paying attention to our Detroit Lions, and they say that our Detroit Lions, in terms of those who have announced and revealed their new uniforms, have the most aesthetically pleasing uniforms. They say here, over the last few years, the historically downtrodden Lions became one of the league's darlings and came a score away from a Super Bowl appearance. They've now turned things around in another way, too. The Lions will now look even sharper when they hit the field in 2024. It says here, while the white jerseys didn't change too much, swapping in a blue face mask for the incumbent silver one is the type of subtle refurbish that makes a big difference. That same helmet will be worn with the home blues, which got a makeover as well, replacing the silver numbers with fresh white ones, a nice touch, and the stripes borrow from the Ford Mustang, a loving nod to the city's auto industry. Which leads us to Ted Ryan, the archive and heritage brand manager at Ford, and Ford's role that you might not have realized in the new Lions uniform. And it's going to all be on display for the world to see tomorrow. Ted Ryan, welcome back to the Focus Show with Paul W. Smith.
Thanks for having me on. This is an exciting and interesting topic. It's not one that you see every day where Nike, the design, and let's get it out there out front. Nike designed the uniforms. Ford didn't. The Lions didn't. Lions had say, obviously.
Right.
But it was the Nike designers. But I love the fact that they went back to the DNA of two of the great automobiles in Ford history and Detroit history, the Bronco and the Mustang, for some of their design cues that they would then turn around and incorporate back into these amazing new uniforms.
Now, is this, you say Nike and Nike design. Where did the Fanatics play a role here?
That one I'm not quite sure on. I just know the Nike component of it.
Okay.
And
I would hope that they would have asked either Sheila or I would have hoped they would have asked for some input or some ideas.
Oh, there was definitely input from the Lions side onto the design of the uniforms. But the actual physical design takes place in the Nike design studios. But you mentioned the Mustang and the piping in the sleeves. It's the classic 1964 and a half Mustang with its vertical lines and its beautiful stylized curves that form part of the inspiration and that would frame in the sleeves and frame in the numbers. Interestingly, the Lions Honolulu blue was never a Ford car color. Ford had plenty of different car colors, but the Nike designers looked at some of the colors of the Bronco, and particularly in the mid-90s when Barry Sanders was roaming the field, as ways to highlight the Honolulu blue and bring it to life in a different pattern. And then one of my favorite touches is William Clay Ford. They had a very stylized signature and a very dapperly dressed gentleman to boot. So he had a William Clay Ford logo on the inside of his jackets that was there. That same William Clay Ford logo is incorporated in to the design of the jerseys behind the neck. So it's the little Easter eggs, and it's the little nods to the team history, and it's linked back to Detroit.
And even a nod to Dan Campbell, who, of course, played for the Lions from 2007-2008 when they had a black alternate. He made a cheeky little agreement with team president Rod Wood, quote, "We win the division, I'll bring the black jerseys back," Wood told him. And lo and behold, the Lions won, and now there's a black alternative.
They're back, and that was one of the most fun things about the reveal of the jerseys, was and bringing back that black one. We used a Mustang Dark Horse and Shadow Black to help unveil the alternate black jersey, which was wildly cheered by the fans there. You know, and what I loved about that is it just shows you the optimism about the Lions. You just addressed it earlier, the downtrodden franchise. Well, they play away from the Super Bowl, and the optimism that's in the air, and you can almost feel that optimism with the reveal of these new jerseys as people are looking for reason to celebrate the team and the city.
Absolutely, and we have lots of reasons to celebrate. It is the new Detroit Lions, and we are very excited, and excited for that not just the new Lions, but the new Lions uniforms. What do you have planned? What's on the docket for you, Ted Ryan, for the draft tomorrow, starting tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
I am going to be taking my 22-year-old football-obsessed son to the draft all 3 days. I don't have any special tickets. I just got the generic available to everyone tickets, but we will be down at Hart Plaza and Campus Martius. So he's a Falcons fan, though. I'm going to warn you. So if you see somebody walking around with a Falcons jersey.
You're the archive and heritage brand manager at Ford, and he's a what?
He's an Atlanta Falcons fan. I'll be wearing the Lions jersey. He'll be wearing a Falcons Julio Jones jersey. But it's just the excitement. And I flew back from Los Angeles on Sunday. I was at Fabulous Ford's there, a huge Ford event. And half of the plane coming back from L.A. was filled with people in NFL jerseys and logos. So the city of Detroit is going to, I think, be surprised by exactly how many people are coming to town this weekend.
Oh, I think, it's funny because I think people try to hedge their bets. I've heard people say anywhere from 300,000 to 600,000. That's a big spread.
It's a big spread. I'm actually already game planning ahead how I'm going to get down there and back.
Well, everybody
what is
should,
parking going to look like? Yeah, so but it's going to be exciting. And the reveal of the uniforms last Thursday sort of kicked off to me the entire week that's going to culminate in all these visitors to Detroit. And thank goodness, I heard you say on the weather right before I came on, the temps are going to edge back up closer to the 70s by the weekend. Let's not have all these visitors to Detroit think it's a cold and dreary city.
Right.
So let's get some nice weather and celebrate the NFL, which is the most popular sporting product on the planet, it feels like.
Yeah, this is a great time for Detroit. It's a great time for our Lions and a great time for an archivist and heritage brand manager for Ford, and that would be you, Ted. So congratulations. Have fun with your son. Try to convert him. And just have a great time. I know you will, and you'll be among all kinds of people having a great time.
Thanks
you so much
for having me on today.
Oh, of course, Ted. Thank you so much. There's the rest of the story behind the new uniforms. And yes, it's contentious. There are people who don't like change. B, there are going to be people who don't like this or that about the uniforms, and that's just the way it is. But C, there are some people who are going to just love them and accept them for what they are. The new uniforms for the new Detroit Lions. It's all good. It's all good. As we continue, Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. The place to be all day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Well, always. Here we are, hour two underway in Focus with the team. Mike Parsons, yep, that's the same Mike Parsons you can wake up to very early in the morning, 5 to 6 a.m. Monday through Friday. First thing with Mike Parsons and Renee Vitale. Same one. Danielle Mason running all the controls and keeping us in line. Rich Luzinski, our WJR traffic and weather first. And, of course, you can always stream us. Have you thought of that lately? It's really easy to do. It's not the future. It's now, where you can stream us on all your listening devices, even in your car, but anywhere, in the house or office, wherever, for really good quality listening. And you do that at WJR.com or the WJR app. And that would include the podcast, too. That's now where you can also get the podcasts to listen to the shows you couldn't be listening to, the noon to two, if you couldn't be around. Listen to them at any hour of the day or night. And individual interviews you can find oftentimes as well. Listening to the whole show takes a very, very little time, the way they edit it down without, of course, obviously we don't have traffic and weather in there because it wouldn't make sense when you're listening to a podcast hours later. But just so you know, couple of things I've talked about in the past. I did talk about how on all of our jobs, there are fewer people. We work with fewer people and have greater responsibilities, more hours, etc. And I suggested a week or two ago when we were having all those problems with airplanes, and we had more where we had like four airplanes on the same runway, and I said the air traffic controllers are clearly, like everybody, overburdened, overworked. They don't get as much sleep. They're tied up because there were fewer air traffic controllers. And sure enough, you've seen stories now where the FAA is saying we need to guarantee X number of hours of sleep for those air traffic controllers. They are overworked. So there it was. It's the same thing we're all dealing with. And we better look at other jobs where lives are at stake and make sure we have enough employees in those jobs and that the employees that are there not only are good, but well rested. So there you are.
And I always thought that was the rule with air traffic controllers. I don't know if maybe COVID, where people are having a hard time hiring people, changed that. But I was always under the impression that those were strict rules. So I don't know how.
You mean you thought that was already there in place?
Yeah. Once upon a time, there was for air traffic control and for pilots.
Well, and even people who drive trucks, they have books that they have to maintain that say they're on the road X number of hours and then they go to sleep. And they can only drive so many hours. I mean, it is something that was supposed to be in effect. I don't know what happened. You're right, maybe COVID. But COVID was an excuse for a lot of things that weren't necessary, frankly. But
right.
Don't even get me going down that path. But I also have talked about, I've always talked about clean water because of our relationship with ApsoPure. Clean water, very important. Can't trust all the water all the time coming out of spigots. It's just the way it is. But I also said that the next thing is going to be something we can do something about, and that's clean air. And we're told in this little report, nearly 40% of people in the United States live with unhealthy air. Unhealthy air pollution. I don't think there's any healthy air pollution, but unhealthy air pollution. This is from the American Lung Association. That means 40% of people, that means 131 million people living with levels of polluted air that can significantly affect their health. And that's up from 119 million in just last year's data. So they say extreme heat, drought, and wildfires are among the factors that have contributed to the increase, especially in the western part of the country. Several cities in the region, including Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Denver, also received F grades for ozone smog, according to the report.
And I really felt like we learned a lot about air pollution and fine particulates last summer where, there are certain times where it looked smoggy here in Detroit because of those wildfires from Canada.
Yeah, we saw it. We experienced it, and worse, we breathed it in. And I've told the stories a million times before where when we used to go on these international auto shows and we would go to China. And the first time I was there, I looked around and I looked up and I couldn't see the tops of skyscrapers.
Right.
And I said, well, gee whiz, is that fog rolling in? And my hosts said, no, that's smog. And, smog is just another name for pollution. The pollution was so thick, you could not see the tops of the skyscrapers.
And really, there's nowhere to go to get away from that, because when it's that bad, it filters inside as well, unless you have a really great filtration system.
Well, and I guess that brings me back to our own homes that have pollution from a lot of different sources, even the furniture in the house. I mean, everything gives off these little gases and carpeting and all the rest of it. So it's why I keep saying it. I haven't done it yet. I want to look into the best, the very best air cleaners for a house. And I'm working with the folks from Family Heating, Cooling, and Air Conditioning, because they have equipment like that. I'm looking for the best, and I'll report back to you when that happens. Because it's just so important. And it is something we can do something about. We can make sure we have healthy air. A couple of notes here. Let's, as we accentuate the positive, relentless positive radio. Not always easy with a lot of stuff going on, but I see this story from Jennifer Chambers in the Detroit News. The headline, two Michigan high schools among the nation's best. National school rankings announced yesterday revealed mixed news for Michigan. One of its high schools made the top 10 list. Oh, but then there's the rest of the story. The state's ranking among other states slipped five spots to 31st place. What?
Bottom half.
Two Michigan high schools, the International Academy of Oakland and the International Academy of Macomb, ranked 8th and 18th, respectively, in the nation, in U.S. News & World Report's 2024 edition of Best Overall High Schools. We take that seriously, don't we? That's a serious study.
Sounds like you can't go wrong with an International Academy of.
Yeah. We're going to have to change the names of all the other high schools and work that in. But the set of new national high school rankings announced yesterday, as we said, the rankings evaluate nearly 17,660 public high schools at the national, state, and local levels, and include national and state rankings, plus best STEM, charter, and magnet high schools. I don't like this, that we saw our rank, compared to other states, drop.
Yeah, what, say five, six places? So it sounds like we were right there in the middle, and now we're below the middle.
That's not where we want to be with education and our kids. Well, at least we know, and if we know, maybe there's something we can do about it. Well, we're going to have to, aren't we? We will reap what we sow. We certainly have seen that on college campuses now, haven't we? We don't want it to spread down into the high schools at all. Not like that. All right, we're underway. Lots to talk about, lots to do in focus on this Wednesday, April 24th, glad we're all together on WJR. Well, we don't need no stinking cold temperature records right now. Just a little editorial comment regarding what our Mr. Weather Guy just said about the cold temperatures. All right. Unavoidable, important story to talk about. The terrible, terrible story of the 66-year-old woman allegedly driving under the influence of alcohol and killing a little brother and a little sister, injuring their mother and other brother. It is a horrific story. What makes it worse, completely unavoidable, completely unnecessary. Didn't have to happen. Somebody made a decision to drink and made a decision to get in their car and drive. I hope and pray by this story getting the attention it is from my hometown of Monroe, Michigan, it will stop at least one, if not 100 people, from getting behind the wheel after they've been drinking. Totally avoidable situation. Front page of the Detroit News today, and you can only imagine the emotion behind this, a quote, "She took those babies from us." Emotions high as ex-boat club leader charged with murder in the kids' crash deaths. Sidebar story, siblings recalled as funny and flawless. This is just one of those horrific, horrific stories. We call upon Todd Flood, attorney at Flood Law, to talk about the 66-year-old woman arraigned on 8 counts yesterday after allegedly driving drunk, crashing her car into a birthday party in Monroe County, killing those 2 children, injuring over a half dozen other people at a boat club she apparently used to be the commodore of. At least that's as I understand it. Todd Flood, welcome. I'm sorry it's about this kind of story we have to talk about, but the fact is, if talking about this brings it to the attention of other people who have gotten away with drinking and driving, maybe this will get their attention and keep them from doing it. I can hope, can I?
Yes, yes. You know, it's you hit the nail on the head. It's one of those things where we have so many different ways to get transportation, be it Uber, Lyft, whatever the case may be. The fact of the matter is this was totally something that could have been avoided with just common sense. You know, we need to know all the facts. I don't know all the facts of this case, but from the arraignment, it sounded to me as though the prosecutor said the road test, the PBT that was given, had a pretty high level of intoxication, which is why they didn't charge OWI causing death, which is a 15-year offense. They charged murder, too, which is a life offense. So guidelines are very high on that count.
Let me just get something clear that I think I already know the answer to this, but I'm just wanting to be clear because you just kind of spelled it out. Her attorney said that she had a seizure. I suppose that would be, you know, one line of defense. But the First District Court there in Monroe wouldn't charge her with 2 counts of second-degree murder, 2 counts of operating under the influence of alcohol causing death, and 4 counts of operating under the influence of alcohol causing serious injury, unless they already had the tests back that showed she was indeed under the influence of alcohol, right?
So the standard for charging, the prosecuting attorney needs probable cause that a crime was committed and probable cause that that person committed it. How do you establish the probable cause? You had to establish that she was intoxicated above a certain limit. So in Michigan, we have a super drunk, which is 0.17. Normally, anything below is, you know, you get the manslaughter type charge, the OWI causing death, which is the 15-year. So it is safe to presume that a prosecutor is not going to fall under the political pressure, the media pressure. They're going to do what's right. And if it hits that high number, and that number was, you know, this 0.17 or above, they had enough probable cause to charge that.
So having paralysis, having the epileptic type seizures she's been having, I guess, allegedly since November, none of that matters. It matters, but it's all trumped by the fact they found the alcohol level too high in her blood.
That is correct. That's what's going to be the coup de grace there. Now, let's say she was alleged that she's taking medication. Doctor didn't say, you know, you couldn't drive or you couldn't drink with this medication. That's, you know, poppycock, because on every medication, I assure you, it's going to say a warning, do not drink and drive with this medication, period.
Right.
So
right.
Notice is given, right? You know, for all the listeners out there that are asking, well, why isn't this the OWI causing death? We have a famous case in the state of Michigan of People v. Gecky, and you know, where you knowingly, you stopped, these kids stopped and got more alcohol after they were already drunk. They went to a 7-Eleven or to a party store, got more alcohol, drank more, and drove and ended up killing, you know, several people. That was the standard. That's why it got up to. It's this gross negligence, this willful, wanton disregard. That's the buzz term, that willful disregard, knowing that you driving this heavy killing machine It's a disregard when you're doing it and you're intoxicated to everybody out on the street. The fact, if she didn't have any alcohol, or she did have a lower limit in her system, and that she had this unforeseen seizure, that is a defense. But it doesn't sound like it to me in this particular case, because I know the Monroe County prosecutor, I know his office, and they pretty much, it's always been my experience in a way, that they hit it down the middle. So they're not going to charge this unless they had enough probable cause to make that happen.
I didn't even hear this part, which is somehow eerily even worse. She was actually invited to that birthday party and supposedly was on her way there to meet her husband at the party. I had not heard that before.
Yeah, that came out as well by the defense attorney. And I know the defense attorney, he's a very good attorney, but, the fact of the matter is, when you look at the car, and I just happened to catch a snippet of it, it is like there's no braking, nothing. It's just a straight beeline into that, into the facility.
Mike Parsons, Mike Parsons pointed that out to us from watching all the different camera views. Mike, that's what you said. You saw no braking whatsoever.
Right, which made me think maybe she wasn't conscious at the time.
That she could have actually been passed out.
Right. So, and, there is all sorts of liability here, too, because where was she drinking? Did they overserve? Did they know she was intoxicated when she came in? What's her past and background? That's all going to come into play as well.
I think the mother's already sued, sued the woman, and sued the tavern or wherever they think she had been drinking. I believe I heard that.
Yes. John Marco gave notice. They have to, under the dram shop law, you have to give notice within a very short period of time to put everybody on notice that you're suing that you're intending to sue on that claim for the dram shop. And that should, here you go, right? There's so many different layers to this. You serve people at your home and they're intoxicated and you give them the keys, you let them drive, the liability. It's just common sense stuff. It's common sense to make sure you have an alternate way of getting home or transportation. It's that simple.
Yeah. A lot of lessons learned, but late, with two little kids dead.
Tragic.
It is so tragic. Todd Flood, thanks for your expertise. We really appreciate it always.
Always appreciate you, Paul W., and thanks to Mike.
Todd Flood, attorney at Flood Law. All-around good guy. Sorry we had to talk about this, but we had to. It is a horrible story, but a lesson or several lessons to be learned by many, many people. We continue in focus on WJR. Well, I mentioned, you hear it on a promo, actually, that I sadly will not be able to do the show tomorrow. It's such a very special one. We've waited so long for it, but I've also waited very long for a special doctor's appointment that the only time I could go is tomorrow, sadly. But if you've seen me around, you know that I've got some problems, some mobility issues, and I need to get these things fixed. As much as I hate to go to doctors, and I'm a man. We put things off, sadly. It's not smart, but that's what we do. I am fortunate, however, to have someone filling in for me who we couldn't ask for a better person on this day, tomorrow, for the first day of the Detroit NFL Draft. That is the chairman of the Detroit Sports Organizing Corporation, in the heart of all of this, Mr. Terry Rattigan. Terry, I can't thank you enough. I wish I could be there with you.
Paul W., I wish you could too, but I can't tell you just how much it means to me that you would entrust your show to me on this historic day. So I promise to do you proud, my friend.
I'm certain that you will. And you have a certain set of skills. Sounds like in the movie there. You have a certain set of skills that are perfect for this because you have a direct line to all of the important people that are making this happen. And I suspect many of them will appear on the show tomorrow from noon to 2. Or are you going an extra hour, or are you noon to 2?
Just noon to 2. And okay. We do have a great lineup. I have to hand it to Mr. Mike Parsons. He's been an invaluable partner on this as we fill out our lineup. And we're going to have to probably be a little bit flexible, because I think in real time, it's going to be quite chaotic there down. You know, we're outside on the porch at the Cube, which is also called the Chase Tower. It's right along Woodward Avenue. So it's going to be in the heart of it. And we may have passers-by, surprise visitors. Who knows what's happening? But we're really, really looking forward to it. And, again, honored that you would ask me to substitute for you.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm not getting this screwed up one way or another, your Detroit Sports Organizing Corporation has just made a $1 million donation to the Sports Commission ahead of this draft. Did I get that right?
You did get that right. $1 million was set aside, and we had such an amazing event, Paul W., on Monday at the Corner Ballpark, you know, Detroit PAL, an organization you're very familiar with and have been supporting for years. And we had all of the organizations, recipient organizations, and we had what was called the Community Impact Draft. And we even used that signature NFL draft music that you're playing on your show. And we brought up all these different organizations to hand out grants. We had city council there. Mayor Duggan was there. Our great friend Mike Tirico was the MC. It was standing room only. The energy in the room was unbelievable. The Corner Ballpark looked fantastic. It was sunny. I tell you what, it was really the sort of official, unofficial kickoff of draft week here in Detroit. And that $1 million is going to go to great organizations, large and small, big organizations like Beyond Basics and Project Play, but then a bunch of other what they call micro grants. But it's really not a micro grant to a small nonprofit. It's a big deal, and it was a really great day.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that, all of that, and I will always support PAL. That's such a great organization. We've had many years and millions of dollars involvement with PAL, and we'll continue as long as we possibly can do that. The Detroit Sports Commission, with the support from Visit Detroit, Detroit City Council, and generous donors from the local civic, corporate, and philanthropic community, offering grants to organizations throughout Detroit's 7 districts and the region. That from Dave Beach now, executive director of the Detroit Sports Commission. So many good things are springing from this wonderful event that we were, I was going to say we were lucky enough to get. We weren't just lucky. We needed people like yourself, Claude Molinari, and a list too long to go through to get the attention of the NFL and to have the NFL draft here in Detroit. That was not just a gimme.
No, and I'll tell you what, WJR's own Mark Hollis had a big role to play in this. Many years ago, this is a 7-year journey, and Mark had the vision, and he brought it to the mayor, and of course, Mark has the connections as well. So it was we were not successful the first time, maybe not the second time, but we kept going after it, and we got it. And any city in the United States would gladly trade places with us right now, but this is our draft, and it's going to be a great, great weekend in Detroit. No question.
You know, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. We're with Terry Radigan, chair of the Detroit Sports Organizing Corporation, sitting in for me, thankfully, tomorrow while I go visit a doctor. But I can tell you, we have so many events this summer that any other city would be thrilled to have one of them. But we have several of them. It's amazing.
Well, you think about it. We're just about 5 weeks away from the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix presented by Lear. And we'll have Michael Montroy on the show tomorrow. He'll actually be live with us, so we can start to build the hype for that. And Jason Langwell's a key part of our draft team, and of course the executive director of the Rocket Mortgage Classic, which is coming up also in June. And the list goes on and on and on. You're right. We are very fortunate, but it's because Detroit hustles harder. That's why we have these events.
You mentioned Mike Tirico with you on Monday. He'll be around all this time, but he'll be up at Mackinac again. at Sandy Baru Oz, a Greater Detroit Regional Chamber Policy Conference at Grand Hotel. Mike Tirico will do the opening night dinner, as he did last year. And nobody does it even close to the way Mike Tirico handles these things. He is the GOAT, period.
Fully agree. And he's such an engaged member of our board. And we just can't thank him enough. In fact, last night he hosted some out-of-town journalists at the DAC and wanted to introduce these out-of-town journalists to the Detroit Sports Commission. So we had Reese Davis there, and we had, from ESPN. We had some of the local journalists as well, but the football correspondent for the USA Today was there, and it was just a really nice event. And Mike goes above and beyond all the time. He's just such a great, great man.
He sure is. That's the truth. Well, you're a great man too, Terry Rattigan, the hardest working retired GM executive I've ever known. You stepped from one to the other, and you're doing a great job. As the chairman of the Detroit Sports Organizing Corporation, you'll be on display and helping my listeners understand what's going on right from the center of all the activity in the Detroit NFL Draft tomorrow from noon till 2. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Paul W. I hope you feel better, my friend.
Oh, I'm sure I will. As we continue, thank you for that, on WJR. Well, here we go. We're going to do the traditional handoff in an untraditional way. JR Afternoon with Chris Renwick coming up with Marie Osborne doing the duties. People have been moving around this week, including me. And so, Marie, I know you're ready. You are set to host the show for the next 2 hours, and you always do a very good job with it.
Well, thank you, Paul. We strive to do a good job. How do you like that?
Well, that's why you are where you are and have been for so long.
Yeah, for so long is right. Listen, we're still talking a lot about the draft today. I mean, is there anything else? I went into the grocery store yesterday, and that's all people were talking about. I picked up on two or three conversations, people talking about the draft and what they're going to be doing and where they're going and how they're getting there. So just so much excitement here. And, Mother Nature is cooperating. It's going to be a little cold, but I think we can get through it.
It'll be football weather.
People outside will certainly understand
that. They'll embrace that. And it's going to be certainly exciting. It's a very, very big day, weekend, in Detroit. And it's a dress rehearsal for all the other things that people want to come to Detroit and do. So it's all good.
Yeah, it sure is. And I just love the fact that Windsor has gotten in on this game. They've talked about this two-nation destination and how there are a lot of – I understand it's very hard to find a hotel room. They're basically sold out in Windsor. And a lot of people love this idea that they're going to be able to come to Detroit but go to a foreign country at the same time and enjoy the draft, come back over the border and enjoy the draft. So that's very cool that Windsor is involved in all this.
I've always felt we don't push that enough. Come to Detroit and you're 5 minutes away from an international destination. Mm-hmm. We don't make a big deal. We take it kind of for granted.
We do take it for granted. And whenever we have visitors from around the country who don't often come to this area, we always take them to Windsor, always. And because it's just a fabulous place. Of course, we love Erie Street, where all the Italian restaurants are.
I'm just going to say, do they still have great restaurants?
Oh,
they always had great restaurants.
Oh, yeah. Great service, great food, the real deal. And there are a couple of the little shops that are there that when I walk in there, seriously, it's like you're in Rome or Milan or somewhere. Just the whole aesthetic and, hearing everyone speak Italian, it really is pretty great. So there's Erie Street. There are so many other things to do also in Windsor.
Well, I spent 11 months working there, just 11 months at CKLW.
Didn't know that.
Oh, it was a million years ago. It's when they were trying to switch from music to all talk, which AM radio stations were doing way back then. Same thing happened when I was at WABC in New York. So it was the difficult transition, and it was difficult. But anyway, I can't even remember. Oulette, that was it. I couldn't think of the name of the street.
Yeah, Oulette. It runs right down the middle of, when you come out of the tunnel, It's, you know, that's the street you kind of are directed to is Willette, and you can head north or, well, I don't know if it's north or south, but you can go up or down. You can go up or down on Willette and go to the riverfront or go the other way. But, yeah, so there's a lot of great things, too.
There's an issue I want to talk about real quick that I don't – I did have a problem, but it's not like the problem of today. When our littlest kids wanted to do a sleepover at someone's house,
mm-hmm.
was that allowed at your house when your kids were little?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I preferred to have them at my house, but they were allowed to go elsewhere. They had my kids were lucky enough to have a lot of cousins, so they were, you know, they were able to do cousin sleepovers. But when they would have schoolmate sleepovers, you know, we would, you know, it had to be someplace where I knew where they were going, and I had to know the parents, and they got a phone call. I don't care how old they were, they got a phone call.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, a lot of parents are experiencing, I guess, more anxiety in general these days than maybe we did that many years ago. But I was still always a little, I always wanted to make sure they had smoke detectors and radon,
can you imagine? Oh, my gosh. Mr. Smith is on the phone. Mom, Mr. Smith is on the
phone.
He wants to know, do we have that radon detector? We have
not radon. It's carbon monoxide. That's it.
Do we have the carbon monoxide?
And the smoke detectors. Yeah, I couldn't help it.
Can you just test it so he can hear it over the phone?
I worked on the radio. I had too many stories of where they didn't have them, and it was tragic. But now sensitive topics like gun safety. I never thought to say, do you guys have any guns in the house, and are they locked up? That never even occurred to me.
Me neither. And I know that for a lot of parents today, that issue of firearms is definitely an issue. I mean, they just want to make sure that they're, you know, properly stored and safely stored and all that. If perchance your child is going to a home where there is a firearm, that is something we did not have to. Yeah, we only worried about whether the smoke detector had batteries
in it. But people did have guns, but we didn't. We didn't think
about
it that way.
Didn't think about asking it.
So now what they're saying a lot of parents are doing, and I salute any parent who can, you're going against the flow when you say, no, I can, my child can come for the party, and regardless of when it ends, I'm coming to pick them up. They're not going to spend the night. Now the child is going to feel awkward and bad, and, you know, unless more and more parents do this, they're calling them sleep-unders or a laid-over, meaning the children come to play, but they don't stay to sleep.
Yeah, and you know what? I can, and a lot of times kids don't like to stay overnight. I mean, for a number of different reasons. So it's nice for them to have a way out. In fact, I was just reading about this the other day, that I read about a family where the child had a code word, and in this case it was pickles. And when they would call, and like they were going to go to a sleepover, but the kid didn't want to stay, so they would call home and say, hey, Mom, did you get the pickles that I needed for lunch tomorrow? And she would say, okay, I'll be right over to pick you up. And then the mom would come in and say, oh, you know what? He's got to be up early tomorrow morning for whatever. So the mom would take and make the excuse for the child wanting to come home.
Isn't that brilliant?
A great idea. So your child feels, you know, they're not on the front line of getting harassed. You know, the moms and dads can take it. So I thought that was just the best idea ever.
That is the best idea ever. And I salute parents for being strong enough to being that parent.
Yes.
That you know, is taking a tremendous interest. They want to know who the people are. They want to know who's going to be there. They want to go in when they drop off their child, see who's there, and see what it looks like.
Yep.
And as one parent was quoted in the story that I saw, I don't care what other people think of how I protect my kids.
I always felt the same way. It's just like, okay, get over it. I'm, you know, most important thing in my life is the kids. So
absolutely. What do you got cooking today?
Cooking at home?
No, on the show.
on the show. Oh, you know what? One of my favorite interviews is coming up. John Gallagher, former Free Press columnist, has an opinion piece today in the paper talking about how Detroit really can be very proud of its changes, and we don't have to clean house quite as much as we used to when people come over. So it's kind of a cool thing.
That is kind of cool. Yeah, at first when you said John Gallagher, I thought of our old sales manager 100 years ago.
Yeah.
John Gallagher.
Yeah, no.
He's in the Detroit area, I think, often now. I'm not sure exactly what he's
doing.
Oh,
wonderful to know.
He's got to make a homecoming visit. Well, you have a great show. I know you will because you work hard, Marie. Thank you much.
Thank you.
JR Afternoon with Chris Renwick with Marie Osborne sitting in. We're playing musical chairs around here. Want you to continue to make each and every day count. Each day is a gift. I'm sorry I'll miss you tomorrow, but you'll be happy to have Terry Radigan, chair of the Detroit Sports Organizing Corporation. See you later. Regards, Paul W. Smith.